ಸಪ್ಪಕಾರಜೂರ ಸಂಭುಮ ಗೋ ಗೋಪಾಲಾಯರ್ ವಿಥೋರಂಧೂಂ ಸಾಬಲಾ ಪರಿವಶ ಪ್ರವಿಷಾಧರಿ. When the Vrindavan forest had thus become resplendent, filled with ripe dates and jambu fruits, Lord Krishna, surrounded by his cows and cowherd boyfriends, and accompanied by Sri Balaram, entered that forest to enjoy. Dhenavo mandaka minya udho bharena bhuyasa yayor bhagavata uhuta drutam pritya snutastana. The cows had to move slowly because of their weighty milk bags, but they quickly ran to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he called them, their affection for him causing their udders to become wet. Purport. Srila Prabhupada comments, the cows being fed by new grasses became very healthy and their milk bags were all very full. And when Lord Krishna called them by name, they immediately came to him out of affection, and in their joyful condition, the milk flowed from their bags. Vanokasha pramudita vanara jira madhuchata jaladhara girera narat asana dadrishe guha. The Lord saw the joyful aborigine girls of the forest, the trees dripping sweet sap, and the mountain waterfalls whose resounding indicated that there were caves nearby. Kvachit vanaspati krode kuhayam chabivarshate nirvishya bhagavan reme kandamula palashana. When it rained, the Lord would sometimes enter a cave or the hollow of a tree to play and to eat roots and fruits. Purport. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that during the rainy season, bulbs and roots are very tender and palatable, and Lord Krishna would eat them along with wild fruits found in the forest. Lord Krishna and his young boyfriends would sit in the hollow of a tree or within a cave and enjoy pastimes while waiting for the rain to stop. Dadyodharam samanitam shilayam salilantike sambhojaniyayar bhubhuje gopai shankar shanandita. Lord Krishna would take his meal of boiled rice and yogurt sent from home in the company of Lord Shankarshan and the cowherd boys who regularly ate with him. They would all sit down to eat on a large stone near the water. Sadvalo pari sambhisha charavato militikshanam triptan grishan vatsacharan gascha svodho bharashrama pravrit sriyam chatam viksya sarvakala sukhavaham bhagavan bhujayam chakre atmashakyu abhimitam. Lord Krishna watched the contented bulls, calves, and cows sitting on the green grass and grazing with closed eyes. And he saw that the cows were tired from the burden of their heavy milk bags. Thus observing the beauty and opulence of Vrindavan's rainy season, the perennial source of great happiness, the Lord offered all respect to that season, which was expanded from his own internal potency. Purport. The lush beauty of the rainy season in Vrindavan is meant to enhance the pleasure pastimes of Sri Krishna. Thus, to set the scene for the Lord's loving affairs, his internal potency makes all the arrangements described in this chapter. Om Agyantimirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmoy Sri Guruve Namaha. in the beautiful forests of Vrindavan. Lord Sri Krishna is engaging in the most beautiful affairs of love with all of his devotees. In fact, it is explained here that the Vrindavan forest is composed of the internal potency which makes all arrangements for the beautiful loving affairs between Krishna and his devotees. As we have read in Brahma Samhita, Vrindavan Dham is the highest of the abodes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes we wonder, in the spiritual sense, how could one thing be higher than another? After all, the spiritual world, everything is absolute, and everything is perfect, and everything is complete. So how can something that is complete have more than something else that is complete? Because complete means everything. This is something that with our material mind is difficult to understand. If something is complete and whole and everything is contained within it, then how can you have something more in that? Similarly, it is described in the Shastra that 1,000 names of Vishnu are equal to one name of Ram, and 3 names of Ram are equal to one name of Krishna. But yet we understand that the Absolute is perfect and complete and within his name. On the Absolute level, everything is infinite, eternal. So what is 1,000 times infinity? It is infinity. What is 3 times infinity? It is infinity. Is there a difference? In quantity, there is no difference. In quantity, the Absolute is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. But in quality, in the Absolute realm, there is variegatedness. And this is the difference between the Brahmavad and the Vaishnava philosophy. That we accept the Absolute is Satchit Ananda, is never-ending, eternal, inexhaustible, without beginning, without end, all-pervading, complete, whole, and perfect in every respect, absolute, the cause of everything that exists. There is no argument in this regard. But within that Absolute, there is qualitative, not quantitative, but there is qualitative variegatedness. And all of that qualitative variegatedness is only for the purpose of increasing the Ananda Shakti, the bliss between the Lord and his devotees. There is no other reason. Krishna has no need for anything but Krishna's Rasa Raj. He is the supreme king of loving exchanges. And therefore the entire spiritual realm is simply designed by the internal potency of the Lord to facilitate loving exchanges. Where there is infinite variegatedness. After all, everything about the spiritual world is absolute and infinite. So the Brahmavad philosophers, their idea is everything within this material creation is finite. All the forms, all the personalities, all the names, they all have a beginning and an end. They are all subject to birth and death. They are all under the influence of time. Therefore, if we want to relieve the suffering of material existence, we have to enter that stratum of consciousness which is beyond time, beyond space, beyond relativity, beyond temporary conditions. And therefore, in that realm beyond this mortal world of names and forms is a realm where there is no names and no forms, where everything is simply infinite, all-pervading, and eternal. And that is correct. Beyond this material creation is the spiritual sky. But a higher understanding, which is revealed by the Vedas and by the Shastras and by the great Acharyas, is that within that unlimited, infinite, eternal spiritual existence, there is infinite variegatedness, infinite personality, and infinite form. It is hard for us to comprehend with our brains, which are so conditioned, so condemned to the limitations of its own awareness of this world, to think of name, form, personality, variegatedness, which is infinite and eternal. But that is the definition of Vaikuntha. It is the place of no anxiety. It is the place of supreme bliss. It is the place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally existing in his divine transcendental form of Narayan. And he is accepting the worshipable service of his eternal parts and parcels, the Jivatmas, who are his own expansions, who have eternal personalities and forms, and who forever taste the sweetness of loving service unto him. But that realm, which has qualitatively the sweetest and the most complete of all loving exchanges, is explained here in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the planet of Goloka Vrindavan. And Lord Sri Krishna, when he descended into this world 5,000 years ago, along with him he brought the eternal abode of Sri Brajbhumi, simply to reveal to the world the divine lila of the highest realm of spiritual consciousness. And here we find the sweetness, the innocence, and the pure love between Krishna and his devotees. That everyone and everything is simply conscious of giving pleasure to Krishna. And Krishna, in the spiritual realm, his only business, his only meditation, his only consciousness, is to give pleasure to his devotees. In the material world, Krishna does not directly take interest, but indirectly, through his various expansions and energies, Parashya Shaktir Vivadaya Shuyate, he is constantly arranging things in this world to bring a revolution within the consciousness of those who have rejected him, whatever degree. The gross materialistic people, the atheistic people, they have utterly rejected the conscious awareness of there being a God whom is the controller of all, is the source of everything, and whom ultimately we must surrender to. And the aspiring devotees, those who are on the spiritual path, to various degrees, they are also utterly forgetful of their relationship with Krishna. They are torn between two principles. The principle of Maya, which is that you are the enjoyer, you are the proprietor, and the principle of Yoga Maya, which is that you are the eternal servant of Krishna. You are meant to love him and to serve him eternally. Everything is his property. So we are torn between these two ideas. It is like a tug of war in our heart. This is the condition of a neophyte devotee. In fact, this is the condition of every devotee who has not attained the liberated state of prema bhakti. On one hand, material energy and all the propaganda of this world is pulling us, influencing us with attachment, anger, fear, envy. And on the other hand, the spiritual master, the sadhus, the scriptures, and the very Paramatma in our heart is pulling us toward detachment, toward charity, toward love, toward dedication, devotion, and surrender to Krishna. And we are in between. And it is a great struggle. Sometimes it appears that we are being ripped into two parts. It is painful. Somehow or other, by our own free will, we have put ourselves in a predicament. We are so attached. We are so addicted. And now we realize the folly of our ignorance. And we want to get out. But sometimes it appears that it is too late. It is like we have drunk poison, and then we realize we've drunk poison. I don't like this poison. We think what to do. Therefore, by the grace of Krishna, by the grace of Gurudev, who is representing Krishna, they are teaching us how to vomit all this poison out. But everyone knows that it's not a pleasant thing. It's very unpleasant to vomit all of these poisons of material attachments out from us. Therefore, most people, they do not want to take to a real spiritual path. They want to take to a spiritual path where they can keep all the poisons within themselves. They don't want to go through the trouble of having to get it out because it's too much trouble and painful. But at the same time, they want to be under the illusion that I can keep all my poisons within me and I can be healthy. Just by doing some puja, just by doing some charity work, just by being a little more pious, just by affiliating myself with a particular religion or a particular organization. That way, I have the best of both worlds. I can enjoy material life. I can do anything I like. And at the same time, I have my mantra. I have my affiliation, or I have my savior. And therefore, I have my insurance policy, and liberation is guaranteed. But this is not the case. The fact is, all the poisons must be removed. Because Krishna only accepts pure devotional service. Pure devotional service means ahaitiki aprati hata, without any motivation except his pleasure. And that is a very high platform. Therefore, people who are on a pseudo-religious path or a superficial religious path, they do not feel so much pain in trying to become purified in devotional life. They don't see so much of a dichotomy of the opposites between material life and spiritual life. They do not see the necessity of forsaking materialistic association for the purpose of satsang, the association of devotees, because they cannot discriminate. They think it's all one. It's all right. It doesn't really matter. This is the conventional way of thinking. We're more concerned with all of these material conditionings than we are with the actual substance of spiritual life, which means detachment, knowledge, and devotion. Therefore, we find here in India that people, when they take to spiritual path, as long they like it, as long as it doesn't interfere with their mundane conceptions, as long as it doesn't interfere with my way of livelihood, as long as it doesn't interfere with my family traditions, my cultures, the rules of our caste, and all these other things, then it's all right. This is because we have these conditionings. Bodily concept of life. We're not looking for the essence of devotion, the essence of surrender. We're still considering all of these other designations, upadhis. Sarvopadhi vinirmuktam, vinirmuktam. That means devotional life is meant to free yourself from all of these upadhis, these mundane designations. But it's so deeply rooted within us that today, all over the world, in the name of religion, most of the conception of spiritual life is based on upadhi, material designations. Which means you are from this particular country, or you are from this particular province, or you have this particular color skin, or you have this particular name or title. And this is how people categorize what is religion. Just like Devamrit Prabhu was telling me yesterday, some people in the streets today, they are from one religion, they ask, what is your name? And they say a name, and if the name is from another religion, they stab them. What does this have to do with religion? It has to do with what your name is. Your name is from a particular place, a particular family. That means you are of a different religion and you must die. This is called upadhi, designations. In the West, in the United States, in Europe, there has always been this great conflict between the black people and the white people. It has nothing to do with what a person's character is. It's just your skin is this color, you must die. You must stay in this neighborhood. What was Martin Luther King in his famous address at Washington, D.C., just before he was killed because people didn't like what he said? He said, I have a dream that a day will come when men will not judge each other by the color of their skin, but by the quality of their soul. Of course, that idea is so radical in a materialistic society that he was killed for saying it. But it is a fact that we are so deeply conditioned with these upadhis, with these material designations, that they create such fear in our hearts when something is different, when something is not according to the system that we have been brought up in. But actual spiritual life is based on the principles of devotion, detachment, and surrender to God. And in this world, Lord Sri Krishna is putting his devotees always in situations to induce this process of vomiting to get all the poisons out. just like in natural medicine, even Ayurvedic medicine, if you have some poison disease in your body, they give you some medicine or some process to induce vomiting. Just like Nastri is very expert at this. He has taught me different methods to induce the vomiting. But nobody likes to vomit. It's terrible. It's painful. It's inconvenient. Not only that, it's a mess. Huh? But you have to get the poisons out. So for the devotee, Krishna puts him constantly in different situations to induce vomiting. To induce the situation where all these poisons just come out. All these, ultimately, what are the poisons? Upadis. All of these bodily conceptions. All of these superficial designations. Just, they have to be removed. And what is left? The essence. The essence. Gopi Bhartu Pada Kamalayora Das Das Anudas. That ultimately, we only have one upadi. We only have one eternal identity. And that is that we are the servant of Lord Sri Krishna. And we recognize wherever that quality of servitude is, we want to associate with those people. We want to love those people. We want to learn from those people. And this is Krishna's business in the material world. Through his Yogamaya and Mahamaya potencies, he is purifying his devotees by always pulling them closer and closer to his divine loving service. And at the same time, through his material energy, he is constantly pulling people to fulfill their independent desires. But in the spiritual world, Krishna has nothing to do with either of these two processes. There's no need for purification. There's no need for putting people in mundane illusion. In the spiritual world, he is simply rasa bihari. He's simply enjoying rasa. He's simply giving his love. He's simply exchanging sweet mellows of divine service. Krishna is eternally meditating on how to give more pleasure to his devotees. And when Krishna meditates, he is infinite. He could be thinking of every one of his innumerable living entities simultaneously, how to give pleasure to all of them. And the living entities, every one of them, are constantly meditating on how to give pleasure to Krishna. And in the spiritual abode of Goloka Vrindavan, it is considered to be the zenith, the paramount, the summum bonum of all spiritual realms. Because it is that place where complete freedom and infinite variegatedness in ras is taking place. You see, in the spiritual world, there's no question of high or low in quantity. Everything is eternal. But in quality, although love is absolute, in the spiritual realm, there is the most variegatedness of love in Goloka. Whereas in Vaikuntha, there is not so much variegatedness in the quality of love. And that is why the worship of Radha Krishna is so infinitely sweet. Here we find the spiritual world. In Vaikuntha, Narayan is sitting on his throne. And he is simply accepting all gifts of love from all of his devotees. But here we find Krishna. He's with his friends, hiding in caves to take shelter of the rain. Krishna's waiting for the rain to stop so that he can go out and play. But while he's in the caves, he's playing in other ways. And in this way, such variegatedness. His devotees, they're thinking, when it rains, very nice, then we get to play with Krishna in caves. And when it stops raining, very nice, then we get to go out and run through the pasture grounds and play with Krishna. It is not that they're waiting for the rain to stop. That is their lila. It's just an excuse to have pastimes in caves. In this way, Krishna, it is explained here, the cows, their milk bags are so heavy because they have so much milk. And why do they have so much milk? Because they have so much desire to serve Krishna. The milk in their bag is simply, to the degree there's milk in their bags, that is the expression of how much they want to give of themselves to Krishna. Because every drop of their milk is being created consciously by them simply for Krishna's pleasure and for the pleasure of Krishna's friends. The cows know that Krishna doesn't drink all the milk himself. Subal, Sridham, Balaram, Yashoda, Nanda, everyone drinks milk in Vrindavan. They want to supply their milk to everyone. They are the servants of the servant. They know if everyone is satisfied with our milk, then Krishna will be satisfied. Unless his friends are satisfied, he will not be satisfied. So therefore the cows have big, big milk bags because they want to give so much milk to everyone. But it is explained here that the bigness of their milk ban is a great burden for them. They cannot walk so well. But this to them is blissful. They're not concerned with how well they walk. They're only concerned with how much milk they can give to Krishna. This is the spiritual world. No one is concerned with their own existence. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said, the troubles that I undergo in the service that I offer to Krishna are my greatest pleasure. Here we find an example of this. The cows of Brajbhumi. So much trouble carrying around these big, big, big milk bags. They can't run very well. They can't walk very well. They can't sit and lay very well. But having those big milk bags is the greatest pleasure to them because it's for Krishna. This is bhakti. A devotee just is so grateful and so blissful to be in any situation where he can better serve Krishna. And it is explained here that when Krishna called the cows, they all started running like anything, and their bags were going back and forth and back and forth. But they didn't consider, oh, this is very difficult. They only considered, oh, Krishna wants us. Krishna is calling us. How fortunate we are. So in the same way, when Krishna calls upon us to engage in his loving service, we should not be considering whether something is convenient or inconvenient. We should simply consider one thing. Krishna's calling. Let me be with Krishna. Let me please Krishna. Let me serve Krishna. Krishna is my life and soul. So such wonderful, beautiful exchanges. And it is explaining here how Krishna and Balaram, how they would eat nice food. Boiled rice and yogurt. Now, if you were God, would you be eating boiled rice and yogurt? In Vaikuntha, Krishna is being offered. In Jagannath Puri, Dwarkadish Krishna. What is he being offered? 56 offerings, all wonderful, opulent, succulent foods. The best cooks. But in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna simply eating boiled rice and yogurt. Very simple. And his friends, they all gather together and they enjoy so much pleasure just gathering around Krishna Balaram, eating their boiled rice and yogurt. Not sitting on beautiful tables with all teakwood hand-carved chairs or with all beautiful gold platings or nice engraved decorative tables and silver plates. No, they're just sitting on the ground. They're just sitting on the grass and they just have little leaf plates and little leaf cups and they're eating boiled rice and yogurt. And this is the supreme abode. Because everything is, in Goloka Vrindavan, the Aishwarya, the opulence, the grandeur, is not important. But madhurya, the sweetness, the rasa of love, is so prominent that nobody even thinks about the need for all of this great opulence. The opulence is in the love itself. Mother Jashoda boils that rice with such devotion that any one grain of that rice includes all the tastes of all other foods and all of the creation. Huh? Simplicity is like this. Everything is included within devotion, within love. Krishna is tasting the sweetness of that love. Although it is done in such a way where it's very uncomplicated, just boiling rice, but she's doing it with such feeling that every grain has such taste that Narayan would give up all of his thousands and thousands of luxurious dishes to taste one grain of Mother Yashoda's rice. Huh? And the yogurt, it is offered with such love by the cows that all tastes are included within that. All spiritual ras, all love, is experienced by Krishna and all his friends. Therefore, this is the supreme, most grandiose, and most opulent feast. Simply the boiled rice and yogurt that the cowherd boys are eating in Vrindavan. In this way, they are enjoying infinitely, supremely. And this is the ultimate goal of the bhaktas of Sri Krishna, to enter into the sweetness of this divine lila of love, madhurya ras, aishwarya and madhurya. Madhurya means the opulence is in the simplicity of the love, in the sweetness of the love. This is Vrindavan. And Krishna so mercifully, so kindly, once every day of Brahma, descends into this material world to reveal this supreme abode of Madhurya Ras, Goloka Vrindavan, just to attract the hearts of those who are fortunate to enter into that realm of love. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami explains that considering a day of Brahma is so many billions of years, that Krishna only appeared to reveal this divine principle of Vraj Ras only 5,000 years ago. It is like only yesterday. Srila Prabhupada, when he talks about Krishna's avatar, or Lord Chaitanya's avatar, he speaks just recently. To our mundane point of view, we think, oh, long, long time ago, before modern history dates, Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago. On the physical concept of life, it may appear like that. But when you consider, how long is the day of Brahma? 1,000,000,000 upon billions of years is one day of Brahma. And Krishna only appears once in every day of Brahma. Only 5,000 years ago? By Brahma's calculation, it was only a few minutes ago. Krishna was here playing. And for those whose consciousness transcends the realm of relative time, it's actually always happening, but even historically, very recent. So how fortunate we are to be in such a setting where we are so much endowed with the beautiful teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we are so much blessed by the devotion of the great acharyas, to hear and to chant the glories of Vrindavan Dham. Are there any questions?
Maharaj, this fear we used to have it that because of our past conditioning, we might be having karmi life from last thousands and thousands of births. Now, having so much bad conditioning or having so much attachment because of our past conditioning, now, once we come into the spiritual life, we have to give our attachment for which we have a conditioning from thousands and thousands of years, births. It is not so easy to give so much easily all these attachments of material life. Now, if we compromise this birth itself, giving completely full to the spiritual life, then also we have a fear that we will not be able to leave this attachment altogether, even though we will give a whole life also. So is it so that Krishna will accept us only when we give up, means from our core of our heart, all attachment goes by, or he will see that, okay, he has given one birth, so at least he will give some concession or nothing of that sort?
If we simply, honestly, sincerely, and humbly endeavor to serve our Gurudev according to his desire, then naturally, detachment, in its true sense, takes place within our heart. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata Janayatyasu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayadohaitakam. You may not be able to give up everything now. But Krishna says, Ananya Shintayanto Mam, Ye Jana Paryupashite, Tesham Nityava Yuktanam, Yogakshema Vaham. If you just surrender according to your capacity now, and try to be the humble servant of Guru and the Sadhus, and try to be detached as far as possible now, then Krishna will deliver you. That is his promise. He will help you overcome whatever defects you may have. You just be a sincere and honest devotee and try to execute the order of Gurudev. That's all. That's hard enough in itself. If you simply do that, Krishna will take care of the rest. Ultimately, detachment comes when he attracts our hearts. If he sees we are sincere, gradually he simply reveals himself a little more, attracts our hearts a little more, and naturally we become detached. There is the mechanical process of detachment, and there is the true process of detachment. The mechanical process is I have to give this up and I have to give that up. We have to do that as much as we can. But when Krishna sees we are sincere, he attracts our heart. And when he attracts our heart, automatically we have no attachments. Just like Jamunacharya prayed, now that I have tasted the sweetness of rendering service to Sri Krishna, when I think of sense gratification, which culminates in sex pleasure, my lips curl in distaste and I spit at the thought. He's not curling his lips and spitting, just trying to control the urge. No, because he's tasted the sweetness of bhakti. These things are just have no attraction for him anymore. But that's a very high state of consciousness that comes only by the grace of Krishna when he reveals himself to us by his mercy. And how to attain that mercy? Don't try to be a big tapasi devotee. Just try to be a good servant. Just try to accept things favorable for devotional service and reject things unfavorable. If we sincerely and honestly do that and try to please our guru and the vice, Krishna will save us. Krishna will save us.